Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I would just say get out. People, get clear your offices. We're not going to continue to just, and this quarterback, we're sold a bill of goods so far. Yeah, now, I refrain from saying that.
21 of 35 for 297
That's
and no
his
picks.
Best day.
Yeah, look good.
It's a good day.
That's his only good day.
Okay.
And they lost. They scored 13, 16. They stink, and they angered me. I couldn't even get any joy from the Redskins losing. I couldn't even get real joy out of that.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And for the second day in a row, I will tell you that we are live at Chatter, but we have no customers because we're still undergoing renovation and beautification. We will open again. Today is Tuesday. We'll open in 48 hours from when you hear this, if you hear this at 11 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, because it's 11:30 in the morning on Thursday. We're open for business at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in the capital of the United States of America. My thanks to Jamie. Is it Jamie Berlin who wrote that song with Robert Berg? They came into PTI yesterday.
Oh, yes,
Jamie
right.
And Robert came into PTI yesterday and enjoyed themselves. I felt bad that they couldn't come in here. But actually, there is a very significant lacquer smell throughout the entire restaurant.
Quite pungent.
We could get asphyxiated. And by we, I mean David Aldridge and Tori Clark and Michael Kornheiser and Nigel. You like the lacquer smell?
I do.
Yeah, you do seem to enjoy it, don't you?
A little contact time.
Who needs coffee?
So, anyway... So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my night last night and to lead into something else, which is I could not watch the Monday night game. Mm. I had, honestly, the Miami Dolphins stink.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched four or five plays and realized I didn't want to watch this game. Cam Newton is very, very good on Monday night. He's 5-1, I think. He always gets at least two touchdown passes. He looked great. Carolina is 7-3, and suddenly that division has gone from the worst division in all of football to the best division in all of football. They've got three teams above 500 now, and Tampa Bay, which we thought was going to be better.
That's inexplicable to me.
Right. So I couldn't watch that. Mm-hmm. So then I go over to, and this is local for me, I go over to the Wizards against Sacramento, and I go, whoa. I mean, first of all, the NBA, unlike David, who makes a living with the NBA, I do not. And it's too early. This is how I feel in April and May about baseball. To me, it's just too early. There's other stuff going on. It's way too early for the NBA for me. It's way too early for college basketball for me, even though there's great games on either tonight or tomorrow. But they feel like exhibition games. And I could not bring myself to why. Listen to Buck Hance. And who's he with now?
Carol Lawson.
And I listened for a couple of minutes. And I'm not going to tell you it was bad. It was just too early in the season to get worked up over the Sacramento Kings. I didn't recognize any player they had other than De'Aaron Fox, who I liked at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I'm not going to watch this. And what I ended up, I missed the Knicks game, and I missed it deliberately because Wilbon was all over it, and I just couldn't bring myself to watch it. And in that game, LeBron and Enes Kanter got in a scrape, and they were pushing and they were shoving, brought upon by the fact that some rookie from another planet didn't take any guff from LeBron. What's that guy's name?
Frank Ntilikina. Is that who you're talking
right,
about?
Right, but he didn't play college basketball in America.
No, he's from France.
Right, so he's actually pretty good.
Not bad.
And very chesty. Yep. And LeBron basically is, who is this guy? And then Kanter gets in between, and then they scrap a little bit, and they both get technicals,
okay,
too.
There's a backstory.
Oh, what is it?
You need the NBA guy to explain. So on Saturday night, LeBron, well, the real backstory is that LeBron hates Phil Jackson. Because Phil Jackson...
Oh, yeah, called him his posse.
Posse and all
right.
that stuff.
But last time I looked, he wasn't in New York anymore.
Not in New York, but LeBron still hates him.
So it's lingering.
It's lingering. So Saturday night, when they played the Mavericks in Dallas, Dallas has an outstanding young point guard named Dennis Smith Jr. And LeBron, after the game, said he should be with the Knicks. because the Knicks picked right before Dallas. He said, this guy, Dennis Smith, he's really good. I don't know what the Knicks were thinking. They should have picked this guy. He's
and they picked who?
They picked Frank Ntilikina.
Well, who looked pretty good last night.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the backstory.
Okay, so then they each get a couple of technical fouls, and the Knicks sprint out like they're plus 20, plus 23 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the top of the fourth quarter, LeBron says, really? Really? Because I'm the best player in the world, and let me show you how it's done. Yeah. And he ends up being great. And Kyle Korver.
Mm-hmm.
Gets 19 in a quarter.
Yep.
19.
Yep.
And so they
had 8 assists, I think.
They beat the Knicks.
Did you see him take the subway yesterday to practice?
I saw that. They took the subway, but and a guy said, stop filming. And by the way, the guy's right.
He's completely right.
Do you mind?
If people come up and start filming you, you have every right
to say stop
and break their camera. Call. I mean, what are you doing?
In a public place, Santino. I don't think you do.
You don't?
In a public place, I don't think so.
So anyway, so the end of my story is that I could not find anything to settle on last night and ended up on news channels completely, I did not understand the Donald Trump Jr. WikiLeaks story.
What don't you understand?
Is it bad?
I don't
think to me, he's acquiring information that he can use in a campaign. Why is every Democratic senator saying, well, he's got to testify on Capitol Hill now because it's terrible? Tori, this is your purview.
Yeah, it's just stunning. I was thinking about this morning. If you're a manager in a news organization, an editor in a news organization, how you decide these days, they actually have to work these days, right?
Right.
What is a bigger story? The Roy Moore stuff or this? The WikiLeaks stuff, yeah, we look at it and go, oh my God, WikiLeaks, who cares?
That's right.
But the people associated with Donald Trump, including Donald Trump Jr., have said many, many, many times, we were not doing anything with the Russians. We weren't trying to stir up any of this trouble. We had nothing to do with this. And now we kind of find out, well, yes,
Is WikiLeaks with the Russians?
Well, if you believe Donald Trump's director of the CIA.
The other guy's with the Russians. The guy who should be charged with
Assange.
Treason.
Yeah.
Not Assange. No, the other guy.
Flynn? Oh, Manafort?
No.
Michael
Flynn? Michael Flynn?
The guy who is in Russia now and has been there for 2 years. He and his girlfriend are in Russia. They released all this information.
Snowden?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Yes.
But if you believe Pompeo, who is Donald Trump's director of the CIA, he recently said that we have to understand what WikiLeaks is, and it's a bad actor,
but Trump
and they
is
are supported by the
WikiLeaks.
Russians.
Yes, he is.
But now they've been turning on them. I know you can't keep up with this.
Well, this is my point. I ended up
I'm so sorry for you.
I ended up watching this and not understanding any of it. Like, really, and none of it.
You know
and
what they say, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. They've been trying to say many, many, many times, no, we never had anything to do with the Russians.
No contact.
We never had anything with the US. Absolutely no contact.
So WikiLeaks is with the Russians.
Yes.
According to Pompeo.
That was a terrible movie that Benedict Cumberbatch was in as Julian Assange.
Yes.
I did not see that.
It wasn't good.
Was it an HBO movie or was it
no,
a real
no,
movie?
No, no, no. It was a real movie. Dyed his hair white and it was not a really good movie.
Being
be
ADD, can I go back to the basketball game last night?
Yes.
The Wizards?
Because you watched?
As show prep, of course.
Well, she watches every game. What are you talking about?
Of course. I sit there and fortunately Brian was out of town so I had control of both TVs. And I'm watching the game, the Wizards, and I like the Wizards. And I'm watching the Wizards and I'm sitting there going, this isn't a very fun game. And I'm thinking, I wonder if Tony's watching. Well, he probably is, so I need to keep watching. So I kept watching, and I have to say, I know you don't like basketball at this time of year, and get that.
Not this time.
And don't ask me a name, because I couldn't remember a single name. Mm-hmm. I like that pretty soon, in the second half, these guys who normally don't get to play, and some of the younger guys got to play, and that was kind of fun. And John Wall was terrific, as ever. And Buck Hans and the woman whose name I just...
Carol Lawson.
I like them.
Oh, no, she's very good.
I like both of them.
Who's from
and they
here?
Had
a D.C. girl?
Since
she played
I was,
at Tennessee,
played
right?
at Tennessee.
She was an All-American.
Yes, very good.
She's very good on TV. Mm-hmm.
Since I was all in, and I don't understand much about the game, I was taking notes, and I was listening to them going, they're pretty good.
Well, I have nothing to say about it, but thankfully, because the news fairy sprinkles dust on all of us, David said, can I talk about being a guest coach?
Yes.
And I said, yes, David. Talk about it.
It was so awesome. So
this is at the American University?
The American University.
Did you prep? Did you study?
I did a little bit.
Throw some
chairs. My main objective was not to get teed up. That's what I didn't want to have.
You were actually a coach?
I was
on the bench.
I was on the bench.
It's like a guest bartender, right?
Exactly.
Did you say anything? That's three fouls on him. He's got to go. That's
no, I think, what was my main contribution last night? She's really quick. I think that was... That was about it for me.
You didn't say, let's pull the picket fence on him?
No, well, I didn't.
Well, who did American?
Okay, they played LaSalle last night.
Pretty good squad.
Not bad.
Big five squad.
A-10 school.
Yeah, so, should beat you.
So our first game, we played at Tulsa.
Should lose.
We beat them.
Whoa, that's a
at
big
Tulsa.
Win.
So we come to, so the team, they stayed over an extra day in Oklahoma.
Everybody does.
Because one of the players is from Oklahoma, so they went to her parents' house and had a great time. They didn't get back till Sunday
afternoon.
Got to
clear that with the NCAA if you can do that.
Yeah, they can do that. They can do that. So they went back. They got back Sunday afternoon. Short turnaround. You got to play Monday night. It's home opener, but you still got to play Monday night against a team that's supposed to be better than you. We won by 18.
Excellent.
Who's your best player?
Well, probably Cecily Carl. She's a junior.
Oh, wait. This is women's basketball.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'm sitting here thinking, how did they beat Tulsa, and how could they beat LaSalle? Because I thought it was men's basketball.
No, it was women's basketball. We still shouldn't beat those teams.
Oh, you shouldn't?
No, they're still in bigger conferences than ours, and we beat them both. So 2-0, and Coach Megan Jebbia does a wonderful job at AU. So been to the tournament, got them to the tournament for the first time ever a couple of years ago. And has a good team, a lot of juniors and seniors this year. And they played outstanding defense. I mean, outstanding.
Do you think you would be called upon on a regular basis to sit on the bench?
I doubt it.
Really?
I doubt it. It's a rotating thing. They bring a lot of people in during the course of the year.
That's a great idea. What did you wear?
I wore a suit. I wore a jacket and tie and pants, slacks.
School colors on the tie?
No, I wore...
Oh, they didn't give you a special...
It was like purple. No, that would be a cliche, don't you think?
Not at all.
Did you wear that school?
When I did the fundraiser for Binghamton, I got a green tie. I deliberately wore a green tie because our color is green.
No, I didn't. Colors are red, white, and blue.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I would think so, the American University.
Exactly. So it was...
If you snuck in there a teal or a green, I
wouldn't work. I had a great time. It was so much fun.
Big crowd to see you?
It was not a big crowd, but that's okay. It was
in the dozens?
It's early in the
hundreds?
Season.
In the
hundreds, I would say.
Okay.
But what was always revealing to me is how much you don't know about basketball. I've been covering it for 30 years. And the incredible detail that they go into to get ready for a game. I mean, they went over... It was an amazing set of things that they went over. This is what we have to do to beat this. We have to do this. We have to do this. They like to do this. They like to do this. So they
stop
advance
her
scout.
From going right.
Yeah, but I mean,
left.
It's like we have this set. We do these things, and then we're going to do this. And it's remarkable, and it was a good lesson for me to remember. You don't know what they know.
So in the old days, and I can say this because I'm very old, in the old days of the NBA, in the late 60s or early 70s of the NBA. There were not these many assistant coaches.
Yeah.
There were not these many people involved in a team. Coaches didn't go out on the floor with a chair and sit and diagram. There were no diagrams. There were no diagrams. On the Knicks, the team of my youth, there was Red Holtzman. He was the coach. He was all the coaches.
Right.
There was Danny Whalen, who was the trainer.
Right.
And Danny kept track of fouls for Red and got the technicals that Red wanted to get by screaming at referees. There was Frankie Blauschild, who was the PR man, who was an assistant coach, knew nothing about basketball, but sat there.
Right.
And if Red said, you know, what's going on with that guy? How many points does he have? Frankie Blauschild would do that. And Jimmy Wurgles and Frankie Blauschild were the road secretary and the PR guy.
Mm-hmm.
There were no assistant coaches. When Larry Brown last coached in the NBA, he had 11 assistant coaches. And some of these guys get paid millions of dollars.
They
had an advanced scout who was, at that time, was Dick McGuire, old Mumbles, Dick McGuire. Nobody could understand a word he said. And maybe he would say to Red, don't let that guy in the right deep. You know, and that would be it. And all the teams were that way.
Yeah.
And the level of detail and sophistication was completely absent. And yet, Red Auerbach and Red Holtzman clearly knew what they were doing.
And Coach Jebbia knows what she's doing. And it was also instructive that there was no screaming. There just was no screaming before the game. There was no haranguing. It was all very matter of fact. It was
nobody was like the guy Frank Martin.
No. And it was very collegial. Like she wanted to, what do you think? You tell me. What are you seeing out there? You know. And so there was a lot of that. Now she was in charge and she was telling them what they needed to do. But there was no histrionics And there was no histrionics on the bench either. It was very matter of fact. You need to stop her from doing this. You need to push her this way. We need to do this better. We need to hedge better. And all of those things. And it was just great. It was just great being there and watching it. We're 2-0.
No, you're 1-0.
I'm 1-0, and I demand a raise immediately.
Yeah. It's only fair.
All right, we will take a break. We'll come back with Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports. We'll talk about the NFL. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek read, and it's apropos of David being 1-0 as an assistant coach for the American women's team. Because, as you know, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated. There's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. So if you want to see the American women's team and you don't think you can get a ticket because all the seats at Bender Arena are sold out, you can go to SeatGeek. You can go to SeatGeek and you say, what do you got with the AU women? And you're going to get some.
Section 103 is always good.
SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this high-quality pod get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. That app, you enter the promo code Tony today. That's promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The email reads, Matt Zabrowski from Brooklyn here with a track off a new record I did with Diana Hickman. She sings great, writes really nice songs. The album is called South of Your Thoughts. The song is called Go Time, available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and others. I'm playing D.C. with a great band next Friday, Brother Josephus and the Love Revolution, on Friday the 24th, day after Thanksgiving, at the Pearl Street Warehouse, performing our own arrangements of the entire Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album with our 10-piece outfit. Wow, so they're going to cover the Beatles.
How about that?
Wow, so that's interesting. And also, P.S., greetings to Mr. Tony from my lovely wife, Elizabeth, fellow Binghamton English major alum. But is she a doctor? I'm a doctor. Yesterday, I actually took out the doctorate from where I keep it, which is in a drawer because who cares about it, and read it, and I felt, oh, I'm a doctor. Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports joins us now. I seem to get stuck in questioning on the same stuff because I actually do find this interesting, and it is Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell. And I should preface this by saying that Jason told us 2 weeks ago that this contract extension for Goodell is done and it's going through. ESPN reported something that appeared contrarian to that, but there's no reason to not think that Jason is 100% right on this. So I turned to him, giving him that authority on this, and I ask, the other owners, according to the New York Times, are now pushing back on Jerry Jones?
Yeah, yeah. Jerry's overplayed his hand. Jerry has grossly overestimated what he's capable of, who's behind him, and his authority and his role within the league. And there are checks and balances, and there are bylaws, and there are stipulations, and there are modes of conduct and protocols that are set up to keep this whole thing running relatively smoothly, and most to the point, to make sure that everybody's pockets are filled and, you know, that their bottom lines are taken care of. And it's this, you know, the idea of a league of gentlemen. And there's ways that you may abstain from things, or ways that you may express your displeasure about things. But trying to sort of circumvent the entire process and, you know, have a mutiny just because one of your players got suspended is not the way to do it. And to threaten your business partners with lawsuits especially after everything the league went through with Al Davis, is not a way to find relief and to make friends and influence people. And he's gone way too far in the eyes of his business partners. He has completely isolated himself with maybe the support of, you know, three other owners, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but that's the number I hear most often. And he has now forced the league and its owners to devise their own plans on, okay, if he decides to go nuclear, keeps talking about going nuclear, then what are our nuclear options? Not that we're going to press any buttons, but we're certainly going to have all of our ducks in a row, mm-hmm. and we're going to get lawyered up too, and we're going to get prepared, and we're going to have a case against him, and we're going to make sure that he's aware of, okay, this is beyond the pale, and you're going to start feeling it in your pocket. And maybe your team loses draft picks and things like that as well.
Well, let me. Jerry Jones is not inconsequential. Jerry Jones has made that league a lot of money. They resisted him for a while, and then they came to understand that Jerry Jones really is a good businessman. This can't just be about Ezekiel Elliott in my mind. It's got to be larger than that, or am I wrong?
Well, I think it's Ezekiel Elliott and sort of what the Ezekiel Elliott thing means. Mm-hmm. He went around for, the better part of 6 months telling everybody, I got this. This is my league. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. Zeke's going to play football. They got nothing on him. I know what happens at the league office. I've been assured. It's all good. Don't worry about it. I'm Jerry Jones. And then they actually apply their own six-game post Ray Rice domestic violence policy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't do it. You know, the kicker didn't get it. The Giants kicker didn't get it. And nobody else got it, but my guy got it. And he's not on the compensation committee, even though he'd like to be. And for a while, he was sort of an ad hoc de facto member of it. But, you know, he didn't get everything he wanted there. And, yeah, there's other things about how much money is spent at the league office. And there's various people at Park Avenue, who many owners would rather do without or have run differently or have make less money or what have you. So, you know, you can kind of throw all that in a crock pot and sit it out there for 15 hours and, you know, Jerry gets real steamed over it. But the tipping point was clearly Ezekiel Elliott. If you follow the timeline, he went from being someone who had voted to start negotiations, authorized the compensation committee to pay him what you want to pay him. Nothing to see here. In fact, because I am so influential, could you kind of let me be a part of this anyway? So, I can help get it done and it'll feed my ego. And that's where we were up until, you know, August. And then that ruling came down and he looked like, you know, whoa, Jerry, what have you been talking about for the last 6 months? Mm-hmm. And he was sort of unmasked, and he's been, in the eyes of his partners, unhinged since then.
Okay. Oh, well, we know about unhinged because there's a hearing on Capitol Hill today about the nuclear codes and unhinged. Jerry, I assume, must have leaked the Roger Goodell request for $49.5 million, the lifetime use of a jet plane, and who wouldn't want that?
Yeah.
And the crazy one, the lifetime health insurance for his family, because at 49.5, you ought to be able to pay for that. And I think these are two separate issues. Jerry Jones has acted badly. Nobody disagrees. But Roger Goodell, why do they pledge themselves to him continuously?
Well, I think you have to look at where the league was 10 years ago and where it is now. 10 years ago, massive infighting between owners. You know, they couldn't get it together for the CBA talks in the period between 2004 and 2006 because they were screaming at each other. The Mike Browns wouldn't look the Dan Snyders in the eyes. You know, the Ralph Wilsons couldn't sit at the same table with Jerry Jones. They were divided over revenue sharing and how they would support each other and what the mechanisms would be to make sure that everybody was able to turn a buck, even if they went 2-14 that year. And Roger stepped into that climate, and I think gross revenues at that point were, maybe $5.5 billion. They're now I think, pushing $17 billion.
Ooh.
You went from a CBA that they were fraught over, that they hated, to having Sam Bradford and Matt Stafford come into the league making $55, $60 million guaranteed, fully guaranteed before ever throwing a pass or even signing a contract. You knew what that figure was going to be based on how the process worked, to now having them being a fixed cost. And this CBA has worked greatly in their favor. You saw more TV deals than ever before, more sponsorships than ever before, online streaming, Amazon, people giving them a ton of money to broadcast a regional game that nobody really cared about nationally on, over the net. And he's made them a lot of money. He got a 10-year labor deal done that works grossly in their favor. He got these TV contracts extended all the way to match up with that labor deal. And really, until the Anthem fiasco, right, his approval ratings were super high. Now, that's been a big hit, and a lot of people there are questioning a lot of things that happened at Park Avenue. But they're also now a few years away from having to sit back down with the PA and sit back down with the TV networks. And ratings are down, and some things are not where they were before. And this guy got them a great deal last time, and they're comfortable with this guy being the face of the league, and they're comfortable with this guy taking a lot of the hits that he has to take. And the way that this contract is structured moving forward, a lot of the stuff that Jerry's been railing about and a lot of stuff that ESPN would make you believe, is what Jerry wants is already in the template that they've agreed to. He doesn't get, there's no $50 million. It's impossible. He could continue to make $40 million, but he has to hit a whole bunch of incentives, and there's sort of these yearly subjective bonuses that the owners have to agree to, and they would have to agree to continue to giving him that because he's gone so above and beyond.
Right.
So there is no 50. There is no chance to make more than 40, and he'd have to do everything.
I'd take 40.
He's got likely to be earned and not likely to be earned bonuses, just like would be in a player's contract. He's got to hit all the not likely to be earns and go so far over the top to keep making what he was making.
Right.
So, I mean, we can live in this ulterior universe where now we're going to talk about something that his lawyers may have broached once, sort of just as a suggestion, because, oh, this is what Bud Selig has, and this is back in the spring. But to bring it up now as if this is a stumbling block and as if, oh, Roger's so he's so unhappy with what he's already agreed to that now he wants $50 million.
Well,
and
you do it to embarrass him. That's why you do it. That's the only reason you do it, is to embarrass
the guy.
Right, but
it's not framed in the context of what's really going on here. I mean, the major stuff of this contract's been agreed to since October. And if it weren't, has Jerry Jones been an obstructionist in that he's kind of made this a PR disaster, and so there is no great time to sign this, and then his buddy Trump, jumps in as well, and then they're all working their buddy Papa John's, at least, again, this is the perception among owners. I'm not saying I know what happened, but this is what his business partners are thinking, that, yeah, he's delayed it and he stalled it, but all that stuff is still agreed to, and that committee has already been empowered to do what they have to do, and they're all very comfortable with it. And at the end of the day, if Goodell hits all of his not likely to be earns and all of his subjective bonuses and he maxes out, it's like, what, not even $1.1 million per owner what they're paying him.
Okay.
Somebody told me Gary Bettman, I think, makes 10.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
This guy's, you're going to tell me the NFL isn't four times as important, powerful, is it four times the money-making behemoth professional hockey is? I've covered both. I've seen them. One is not the other. So I think, we get caught up in the numbers, and I get that. And that's an extreme amount of money for anybody to make. But to each of these owners, they're paying backup, tackles more than they have to contribute on a yearly basis to Roger Goodell's salary, considering, all the bullets he takes, him being sort of that human shield, and all the money that they've earned since he took over versus where they were, in 2004, 2005, 2006. That's why it's more than justified in the vast majority of their minds. Not everybody, but way more people are comfortable doing business as usual than they are getting behind Jerry Jones' attempted mutiny when the ball's already, at the goal line about to go in.
All right, I've wasted all of your time on this, so I'll ask you a football question that I look at every single day because it seems to be in our show every day. Can New Orleans actually be good?
Yeah.
Can they actually be good?
I think so. I think so. We know about the offense, and that's established. And, you know, Drew Brees, they're not asking him to do as much as they did in the past, and maybe he's not quite as prolific, but that's a good thing. He doesn't have to be. They ran the ball 24 straight times.
24 straight? That's Army. That's Army.
Yeah. Well, you look, if it's working and...
But Army doesn't have it, Drew Brees out there.
Let's bleed the clock. Well, I mean, it was all, you know, 49-7 or whatever. The game was well in hand. Yeah, I think you have to take them seriously. Cam Jordan's a legitimate defensive MVP candidate, or certainly should be. Lattimore might be the defensive rookie of the year. He's really kind of solidified the secondary, which had been awful. Kenny Vaccaro, who they were trying to trade for a bag of balls back in September, he's actually stepped up his game now that they have a little more of a pass rush, and he's got a little more time to do some things. He's sorted it out. They have some quality. The kid they drafted from Louisville a few years back, the D tackle, he's a ball player. Yeah, it's kind of all coming together.
Wow. And it's a year
where there's not many great teams. And for look, not that Buffalo's great, but that's a nice little win for them. Buffalo had been very good at home. You know, it wasn't a perfect day. It wasn't, you know, climate controlled, hermetically sealed football. And they went out there and beat the snot out of what had been a physical Buffalo team on the road. So, yeah, I think you have to take them seriously. You do. And I think anything's possible in the playoffs there. And, you know, the NFC, we're going to have a bunch of teams that probably win 12 games or more. In the AFC, you know, I think it's Pittsburgh and New England, and everybody else is just sort of pretending. But the NFC playoffs are going to be really interesting.
All right, plug your podcast for us, Jason.
Thanks, Tone. We're back on the Be More Opinionated podcast this week, bmoshow.com. And guess what, hon? We ain't got no guests yet this week either.
Really?
I don't know what we're going to come up with. I'm efforting as usual. Jerry Coleman's doing nothing. I don't know what he does to justify being on this podcast sometimes, Tone. But I put up with him for the greater good. So anyway, check us out at bmoshow.com, on the iTunes, all that stuff. We'll figure something out, man. In the meantime, we'll be drinking some Natty Bows, seeing what the O's do.
Thank you, Jason. Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports. Fabulous. We'll take a break. Nigel will do news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read. I have had Blue Apron. I've liked Blue Apron. Tori, you have had Blue Apron in the house, have you not?
Cooked it last night.
Oh, what'd you have?
Chicken with some white cannellini beans. It was very good.
Really? And yeah, how long did it take you to
this
do
this? This was actually pretty easy, 20 minutes.
Oh, and how many people working?
Just myself.
Oh, you did?
Me and the dogs.
Because I keep saying you need three hands and three pots.
Did
you get the dogs in there to help?
Yeah, it's often a two-person operation.
That's what I think.
But it's kind of fun.
I actually think this is fun. I'm not saying it's fun every single night. If you had to do it every night, you'd be a cook.
Yeah,
but it's fun to do every once in a while. A couple times a week is fun. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year. You won't get bored. You can customize your recipes each week based on your own preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, and pre-portioned ingredients can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Tori, by herself, with dogs, did this in around 20 minutes. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery, including your knick-knack bag, arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. You can check out this week's menu. You can get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TonyK. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. It's Blue Apron, BLUEAPRON, blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I had an idea for them last night. Because I was thinking, I was doing this by myself, right? But I'm thinking somewhere in the country, someone else is making the exact same recipe that I'm making right now.
And you should get a hotline? So
like, well, yeah, like Xbox Live. You know how you play with real people and they're all over the world? You could sync up with them as you're cooking your chicken with white beans.
That's a very good idea. I'll bet the Blue Apron people can get on that immediately.
Get it trademarked immediately.
That's good.
Today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Alex Budin in Cleveland, Ohio, and you can hear all of it at the end of the show. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a millennial little and fellow bar owner in Cleveland, Ohio, called Jukebox. Sorry, Saliza Shinebox was taken. Much like Chatter, we are at our core a neighborhood bar. However, we maintain a music theme to our physical jukebox, which I load with a monthly rotation of rock and roll albums, past and present. In an unwise business decision, I make the jukebox free with tokens so people can pick from our wide mix. You and the gang have certainly had an influence on my musical additions, as I've pretty much covered all the show favorites, even threw in some Three Dog Night for Gene. With that in mind, I have a music submission for the pod. It's an original track from the cousin related to me by marriage, Nick Shaheen, singer-songwriter from Detroit, living in Chicago. He's released two studio albums and given me permission to release to you. When I asked him if it was okay to do so, he replied that his music was rejected by your nephew, Bill Simmons, who opted to go with the indie outfit Pearl Jam. Hopefully it's good enough for your airwaves, Grandpa.
Absolutely.
Indeed it is. Michael, if people want to submit their original music, and we hope they do, tell them how to do it.
As always, they can email their music into the show at jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And you can go buy an umbrella now, right? Tell Michael it's raining.
The final proof is ready. The umbrellas are not in stock yet.
Okay.
But yes, I think they should be up there pretty soon.
Fantastic.
Not along with the anti-Saliza shirts.
Right. Which you're going to sell very large. Nigel, you have some news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. We'll start off with college football. The college football playoff rankings come out this evening, but I think it's easy to say that Alabama is still in very good shape.
Alabama will be one.
Yes. Miami?
Beyond that, beyond Alabama being one, I think it's open as to what it'll be.
I think Miami, Oklahoma, and Clemson are all pretty good. A pretty good bet that they will be in the top four.
Miami is undefeated and beat Notre Dame handily.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go up. I think they're going to be in two or three. Yes.
Wisconsin is probably the team that's like, why not
they're
us?
They're undefeated, right?
They're undefeated, but they haven't played anybody, and they don't
but
have...
But at a certain point.
At a certain point,
win after win after win after
Well, I think
win.
For well, them it is, would be to win the Big Ten.
This is the interesting thing. Because the committee so far has talked about your strength of schedule. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this happens with the NCAA basketball as well, but they let in so many people that it's not quite the same thing. The strength of schedule has been the talking point for this edition of this committee. Wisconsin has not played anybody that is currently ranked
right.
high.
Mm-hmm.
Their next game is against Michigan, which is already a two-loss team.
Right.
And then they will play in the Big Ten Championship against a two-loss team, mm-hmm. either Penn State or Ohio State.
Right.
So their resume building, there's a ceiling to it because they're not playing one-loss teams. So I don't know. I know Wilbon is going crazy about this, but mm-hmm. it's possible that in a very subjective room, they don't jump up enough, even though everybody would say that the Big Ten is no worse than the third and probably the second best conference, but no worse than the third best conference. And if they have an undefeated champion, how do you keep them out?
Exactly.
I just don't think you can.
TCU a couple of years ago, right? Same thing.
They kept them out.
Yeah.
TCU out. But the difference was the Big 12 did not have a championship game.
Right,
so they were named the champion, but not indeed the champion.
And that's sort of what will hurt Notre Dame. I mean, obviously,
Notre Dame's done.
They're done. But if they don't have a conference championship game to sort of redeem themselves and play like another high-ranked team.
Right, but had they beaten Miami, we'd be talking a different way. But they got drummed by Miami.
And the Iron Bowl, as you mentioned yesterday. I mean, that's the game.
Alabama can. This is the most interesting thing. Alabama can beat Alabama. Auburn can beat Alabama. And then go back and beat Georgia again. Mm-hmm. If they do that, they will have beaten two number one teams and a very highly ranked team with only one loss.
Right.
And although they have two losses, I think the general public would say, you got
to
be in it.
Yeah. Right.
This will make Wilbon go insane because he'll say, wait, they have two losses and my team, my Big Ten team, has no losses.
Right. Yes.
And then the chorus of people will scream, "Eat it, Wilbon!"
Yes. Major League Baseball, the award season continues. Aaron Judge, the unanimous selection for Rookie of the Year in the American League, and Cody Bellinger of the Los Angeles Dodgers, the unanimous winner for the National League.
Aaron Judge, star.
Big star.
Strikes out quite a bit, but he's a star.
Big star. People
just signed
see
by
him.
Pepsi.
Yep.
Oh, you want to see him.
Okay. I have a suggestion for Major League Baseball.
Okay.
The way they dribble out these awards. Mm-hmm.
Deliberately done on one day.
I think if they grouped them together more, there would be a bigger impact.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if they had a big banquet?
Yes.
I think the NHL has a big banquet. NBA has a big banquet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wilbon hates the big banquet. Well, he hates everything that's different.
Yeah.
Hates the big banquet. Okay. All right.
Some disturbing news coming out from American Health Associations. Well, the new rating for blood pressure, it's now gone up. So 130 is the new high blood pressure as opposed to 140. I guess it's 130 over 80 as opposed to 140 over 90. This change, the first in 14 years, means that about 46% of U.S. adults, many of them under the age of 45, will now be considered to have hypertension and high blood pressure.
Yeah, at my age, of course, I have high blood pressure because it's very few people my age who can get under the numbers, which were at one point 120 over 80.
Mm-hmm.
So I take pills every single night, and that's not uncommon. But people, Michael, your age, this is going to affect a lot of people your age, and you probably, they're going to first do it with diet and exercise, but then they're going to go to pills.
I'll just wait for the number to change again.
It will
it
change.
Has, it has to go back.
Cholesterol numbers change every few years. And what you can eat changes every few years.
Right.
You couldn't eat eggs. Now you have to eat eggs.
Right.
You couldn't. No, eggs, no, you have to eat eggs.
Eggs used to be the death of you, and now they're the best thing in the world.
Soon they will tell you you have to have cigarettes. You have to.
But it wasn't that long ago where you could see ads with physicians saying, "Hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so," not Dr. Kornheiser. Saying,
I'm a doctor.
I smoke Chesterfields. You should as well.
Right.
Okay, that was 40 or 50 years ago.
50 years ago. That was not that recent.
Grand scheme of things, it's not that long ago.
What else?
Colin Kaepernick has been named the Citizen of the Year
by
GQ Magazine.
Do you get a medal that you can wear around on your neck? I'm Citizen of the Year.
I think you just get a copy of the magazine.
Do you know why they did that?
Well,
they wanted to put him in clothes.
Oh, sure.
And he's a great-looking guy and dresses beautifully when they put him in the clothes they want him to be in. And they call a lot of attention to themselves.
Well, they had
smart.
They had four awards, right?
Who else got awards?
They had Colbert got something.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant got Champion of the Year.
Good for him.
And Gal Gadot, who was Wonder Woman of the Year. And I don't know.
Next year, David will get Coach of the Year.
Coach of the Year.
By the way, how about Gal Gadot, who said, "Oh, you want to make Wonder Man too?"
Exactly.
Not if that bloke's talented.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think about this a lot. What will history say? Will history come to judge Colin Kaepernick as Rosa Parks?
No.
You don't think so, and I don't think
He's not Rosa Parks.
I mean, what is he?
No, he's one person in a larger movement, I think. Again, I didn't read the criteria for how they selected him, but he was a spark. He was someone, something that got something going.
But the larger movement has been, to most people's satisfaction, influenced by better spokespeople than Colin Kaepernick.
I would put him in the Kurt Flood realm.
No, I would not.
You would not?
No.
No?
No, because Kurt Flood is so specifically associated with that himself. Mm-hmm. In other words, Kurt Flood, Marvin Miller, bang, done.
Okay.
You know, Colin Kaepernick, his voice is diffuse. It's not, you don't know, you can't hear his voice. Right. You can't hear his voice. When you see him.
Because he's not playing.
Right.
Right. So I think that he has been
marginalized.
Well, that's why I compare him to Flood, because once Flood went all in, after he played for, the Senators was the last team he played for, I think, right? After
the Phillies? Him with the Cardinals in the
after that. But he played with the Senators in 71. That was it. He didn't play anymore. Right. I probably have that wrong.
But it's referred to as the Kurt Flood. Do you think it'll be referred to as the Colin Kaepernick something?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah,
it was of the year. It wasn't of the century.
What do you got?
Yes, Kurt Flood last year was in 1971 with the Senators. Age 33.
Boom. What else?
I know you wanted to say a word or two, a melancholy happy trails to Liz Smith.
Liz Smith. I did want to talk about this.
Yes.
She died at 94. She was a gossip columnist in New York. She's probably most famous for the Ivana Trump divorce from Donald Trump, where Donald Trump said, I want to buy the Daily News just to fire Liz Smith. Liz Smith, at the end of this piece, she said, she's told the New York Times fairly recently, "I don't think my name could sell anything now. Most people have forgotten about so-called powerful people like me. We served our time," which is a very self-aware comment for somebody in their late 80s or 90s. But Liz Smith, for those of you who don't know who she is, every big paper had a columnist, a gossip columnist. She was not considered a hard-edged person. She was sort of frothy and light and all of that. Not particularly funny. I mean, she had items. But this started, the tradition started, if you've ever seen the movie Hail Caesar, they have Hollywood gossip columnists in there who are based on a couple of people named Luella Parsons and Hedda Hopper. Mm-hmm. They're based on them. There were also some men, though few men, Walter Winchell, he was the number one man, but and I think Ed Sullivan did it for a while. Right? I think he was a gossip columnist. And in the 30s and 40s and 50s, this was an enormous thing, and studios and televisions would leak stuff about people they wanted to make stars or wanted to hurt.
Wanted to hurt,
they would leak stuff to these particular columnists, and they were very, very important. The Washington Post had someone for a while named Maxine Cheshire, I think. She was important.
Somebody Star had Diana
McClellan. And she was important.
She was the ear.
Yeah,
right?
She was important. Right. And that stuff stopped in the
80s. Yeah.
Maybe into the 90s.
The last TV person was Rona Barrett, probably.
Rona Barrett was sort of important. Mm-hmm. And now, as newspapers have no importance, the people that do this on newspapers, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The people who write sports columns and newspapers, it certainly doesn't matter like it used to. I love Barry Zwerluger, love Sally Jenkin, but it doesn't matter like it used to matter because now there's a million ways to get these tidbits. You can go on television. TMZ's on 24 hours a day.
TMZ has taken over everything.
The leaf
but you wouldn't have TMZ if it weren't for the Liz Smiths of the world.
Correct.
They started the genre, and it just took on a different manifestation.
That's exactly right. But now, with everybody having access to the media immediately, it's not the same thing. The leaf blower on a Tuesday, not on a Thursday.
Yeah, could you see me throwing?
Must be because of the construction.
You think that's it? Yeah. So Liz Smith was you know, that won't happen again.
Right.
Like the days when I was writing a sports column with Wilbon, that doesn't happen. We have all been diminished. Mm-hmm. We've all been diminished.
But
I know people very well who don't want to hear that, who think that the world is waiting for their opinions, and it's not.
She had a role in bringing Donald Trump to them.
Yes.
Yeah, she did.
She did. Mr. Tony, I know you follow this, the high-profile, very tense world of professional Scrabble. I know you keep your fingers in that game.
I don't.
Well, there is a scandal in the international game of Scrabble. Yes, Alan Simmons, who is
Richard Simmons.
Not Richard Simmons.
Have we located him?
He's alive. Yes, he's alive. I don't know if he's well, but he is alive. Mm-hmm. But Alan Simmons is a former United...
I'm alive. Maggie the cat is alive. Cat on a hot tin roof for you people who don't know that.
Alan Simmons is a former UK national champion, and he's been banned from the game competitively...
Does he cheat?
...for 3 years after he was accused of cheating. Reaching his hand into the bag, taking a quick peek at the letter, and if he didn't like it, dropping it back.
Oh, no, you got to do what David Stern did for Dave DeBusschere. You got to, like, freeze the letters. You got to freeze the X.
Dry ice.
Yeah.
So apparently, and there's a way that you're supposed to hold the bag up, and you're supposed to show an open hand that you don't have extra tiles.
Oh, of course.
But a young player, guy by the name of Lewis McKay,
you
age 32.
Cheat. Jacques Hughes.
He saw him and he's like, no, it can't be because this guy Simmons is like a legend. You know, he's like, you know. And
he wouldn't cheat.
So he sees it and he's like, well, I'll wait. And if he plays me and he does it, then I'll call him out on it. And of course he did. And that's what McKay is accusing him of, as well as some other players. So now Simmons has been banned by the very same organization that he once founded. It's the International Scrabble Foundation. And he served as president.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah. So now you think, well...
Bernie Madoff.
This is what he said. You know, it's like, well, he would probably protest and say, this is absurd. He says... he's actually been wanting to wind down the number of tournaments he plays in because keeping up with the game has grown tiring and stressful. I will rise above this issue and get on with more important things in life than playing Scrabble.
Exactly.
We'd bring him here to have a Scrabble exhibition of chatter. We would have.
Does he have any other skills?
So you're not going to do Oscar De La Hoya?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oscar De La Hoya has said that he would like to beat Conor McGregor. We'd like to face him. Says you can beat him in two rounds.
Right. Oscar De La Hoya is 44 years old.
Yes.
He has not fought since 2008.
I have no idea.
2008. Yeah. He had a drug problem at one point, Oscar De La Hoya, I'm pretty sure. Could you look that up?
Yeah.
Because if I have to apologize, I'd like to apologize quickly.
Like immediately.
Do it in real time.
But I think there was at one point some innuendo about drugs. Mm-hmm. He would like to fight Conor McGregor, because he just saw a guy make $100 million by fighting Conor McGregor.
That's right.
He says, I'll knock him out in two rounds in the hopes that Conor McGregor will say, okay, old man, let's go. But that's why he wants to do it. Maybe he could. Maybe he couldn't. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
But that's why he wants to do it. Was there any?
Yes.
Yes.
In 2011, he acknowledged he had a problem, but the nature was not revealed, but it turned out to be substance abuse. Yes.
Okay, no apologies
good
necessary.
For you.
Yes, and a couple of other
anyway,
times
that's
as well.
Why Oscar De La Hoya wants to do this. Let's get out of here on this. Let's come back with Old Guy Radio when we return. And we're going to talk about Roy Moore. And Michael has shown me he has cut up his leg.
Yes.
Michael, who's reluctant to speak today because of pain in his leg.
Yesterday was a bad day.
We'll be forced to talk about yesterday. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a ZipRecruiter ad in need of great talent for your business but short on time. You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. Just need the right tools. You need smarter tools. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you can still be smart about the way you're hiring. If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward, but you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to this high-quality pod can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. Let's say you want to post a job for a leaf blower.
Right.
Because you didn't like this leaf blower.
Come on, we like a new
you
one.
Could go to ZipRecruiter.
It's Tuesday.
ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old guy radio for the days from the soundtrack of Dirty Dancing. This is They Call Me Mr. Pitiful. Why are we doing this?
Because on this day in 1987, the soundtrack for Dirty Dancing hit number one.
I love the movie. I've seen it a million times. I love the song. It's interesting. This is Otis Redding.
Yes.
And in the area of critical commentary, I will say this. Otis Redding is best known to most people for the very mournful song Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Right.
This is what Otis Redding did best.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, moving
yes.
songs.
Yes.
Moving songs. Otis Redding's Respect. The fact that Aretha Franklin even released a version of Respect is preposterous after Otis Redding's. I mean, Otis Redding.
So
this is a major player, Otis Redding, in the area of movement songs. Mm-hmm. It's like Sam Cooke. You look at Sam Cooke's work, there's like two distinct. Sam Cooke would sing frothy little ballads, and then Sam Cooke would sing great soulful songs. It's just, it's different.
Do you know how this song came about?
I do not.
Steve Cropper.
An emailer was looking for a nickname?
Yes, yeah, Steve Cropper was sitting listening to the radio, and he heard a DJ call Otis Redding Mr. Pitiful because of the style he sang with all the ballads, ballads and the soulful songs like that. So he said, hey, how about we write a song just saying you're Mr. Pitiful, and 10 minutes later, they came up with this.
Well, it's always, and five minutes later, they went into the studio, and this song
ran. And it's always some whimsical thing. Wasn't there somebody who picked up the mascara and said, remember that one?
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
I wanted you to talk, first of all, talk about your ticket. I thought you got a parking ticket.
I did get a parking ticket. That was the start of my very terrible, no good, very bad day. I got a parking ticket for parking in a emergency no parking zone for 3 days. And this is one of those situations where I pull up in the morning. I guess somebody the evening prior ripped down the sign. So I think I'm in the clear.
Right.
And I show up. I find this ticket. And they had tried to tow my car away. Oh. So I'm running around trying to
They tried to tow your car?
Yes, they tried to tow the car away. And I feel terrible because I understand the very real problem with parking in a city and trying to set up three spaces if you have, let's say, a moving van or a delivery, or if you have one of those little portable trash hauler awares in the front. Mm-hmm. So I felt terrible. But, I think I'm in the right and I can get out of this ticket, but I'm going to write into the D.C. Metro Police and they're going to say, well, this no parking street sign was activated. It was put up properly. You know, I think it's just one of those unlucky situations.
Did you take pictures?
I did not take a picture. I know the gentleman who put the sign up because I talked to him and he said I put it up yesterday and then I came back this morning to reinitiate that sign. So I have his phone number, but I still think it just falls through the cracks where I could explain myself fully, and DC would say, well, the sign was still up, so we, you know, we're sorry for the
confusion. They said they called the owner of the car, but the owner of the car has no record of a call. And I know the owner of the car because I'm the owner of the car.
Yeah, I still think that the final line would say you parked where there is a no parking sign, even if it was not visible to you or not currently up. It had been activated. The owner of that sign put it up in the 24-hour window in advance. So I accept this one as a loss.
And what happened after that?
What happened after that? Well, we took our baby boy to the doctor. Excuse me. This is this.
Get fitted for the hockey helmet.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. This is a really tough moment. I'm going to have years and years and years to disappoint the boy, and I did it in the first 4 months. He's healthy. He has a little bit of a flat spot in the back corner of his head, a little bit of asymmetry in the face, and we do all the repositioning, the tummy time, everything to try and help him out, but it looks like he's going to need a helmet. So that was
This is so new in babies.
Yes.
It's so, I've never heard of
these
things.
And you're looking at him, and for the rest of the day, I'm sure he knew what was coming because he just looked sad. He had a little sad face.
Really? You think he knew what was coming?
Oh, I think he knew. You sit him down, they take 3D images of his head. You know, his mom and his dad are sitting there trying to hold it together, and he's just looking sad. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the middle
he needs his grandpa.
In the middle of the appointment, middle of the appointment, he just let one loose and was, let's just say, very active in the diaper department.
Right.
Okay. Maybe that's why he was unhappy looking before.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying.
The real kicker.
I doubt he knew.
The real kicker was going for a run trying to clear my head after dealing with this ticket and baby boy's head.
Can I just jump in as the mom here, as the wife?
Yes.
Sure. Big day, probably very emotional for your spouse, right? You leave her at home with the baby.
Yeah.
Well, her sister had come over to help watch over the baby so we could have a nice dinner.
Yeah, you should be there helping to watch over the baby.
I cooked a nice dinner.
Why didn't
for
she
us.
Get to go out for a run?
She could have gone for a run if we had timed it better.
I know
she
this
does
movie.
Not like to go for a run. So I'm you know, 1.5 miles into my run.
And now I don't feel sorry for you. Go.
Oh, well, thanks. 1.5 miles into my run. I'm trying to avoid the leaves that are on the ground, wet spots. I'm on a well lit road, and all of a sudden my thoughts get ahead of me, and I'm out over my toes, sliding down the sidewalk. Oh. I've got scrapes all up and down my left knee, and the palms of my hand are cut. And then I had to walk home. It was so bad that a very nice woman stopped.
And you didn't call me to tell me this?
No, it wasn't my birthday, so I didn't call.
Okay.
A very nice woman stopped just to ask if I was okay, and this is a busy road, and I just sort of had to look at her and say, I'm not that far away. And then I did the half walk, half run home, saying, it's a little bit too far away to walk the entire way as I have blood stripping down my knee.
Oh, boy.
It's a Winkle-Bogatash situation.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you.
Sorry.
We're going to have dinner tonight, though, so today should be a little bit better of a day.
Okay.
Tori's playing the world's smallest violin.
Tori's angry.
He's rubbing his knee. So yeah,
go back to your chicken and white bean dinner.
So the biggest story in America right now, I think, and I could be wrong, I think it's the Roy Moore story. Another woman came out last night, and you know there's trouble because Gloria Allred was at her side.
Oh, yeah.
She was very, very groomed, I would say. You know, I mean, like dressed and all of that, which reminded me of the women who came out about Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And they always had a certain kind of look to them.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy Moore, this woman said that Roy Moore, that she used to work in a restaurant that Roy Moore frequented in his early 30s, and she was in her teens, and that Roy Moore was sexually aggressive and abusive to her.
In his car.
Now, the first thing that I think everybody has to do with this, well, I shouldn't say everybody, the first thing that I think of with all of this is the age here. Okay, if you're 70... and you're with a 50-year-old woman, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. If you're 60 you're with a 40-year-old woman, nobody really cares. 50 and 30, you're going, okay, it's a little odd here. 40 and 20, you're thinking, oh, boy, this is a quick second marriage situation. Yeah. You know, right. 30 and 14, no.
Doesn't work.
No, Lewis. No. Yeah. So you have to put in perspective that the Roy Moore you see now is not the Roy Moore who did this. It's a much younger Roy Moore. Like, you can't picture this guy and a 15-year-old girl. I mean, that, you can't do that.
That's right.
You got to give him that. It's a much younger situation. And then one of the things you sort of have to ask yourself is, if you if you agree with Roy Moore's politics or if you disagree with Roy Moore's politics, think of this with somebody on the other side and how you would feel. Mm. Like, if you disagree, you have to imagine some senator or congressman or somebody, and you say, well, I really like that guy. Mm-hmm. What if he was accused of this? Would I have a different sort of feeling? And that's how you get into all of the that's how I do anyway. But what stands out for me is these women don't even know each other.
That's right.
They don't even know each other. They're all telling essentially the same story, and they don't even know each other. If you want to say, as Roy Moore has, that it's politically motivated, you could actually make the case it's politically motivated on the part of the Washington Post. You could. That went after this story for whatever reason they had. But it doesn't seem, Tori, it doesn't seem like the women have any political motivation whatsoever.
You can say what anybody's motivation is, but facts after facts after facts after facts, right? And kudos to the Washington Post, the way they researched and resourced this original story. And these women, to your point, completely independent of one another,
know each other,
describe the same M.O., right? And what's that, the saying about if something happens once, whatever, something happens twice, you go, coincidence. Something happens three or four or five times, you go, okay, there's a trend here. There is a trend here. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've followed this pretty closely. I have yet to hear him emphatically on the record deny that he had relationships with teenagers.
He hasn't done that. No. He denies this particular claim specifically.
Right.
Yes. But then there is the matter of the signed yearbook and your position on it.
Okay. Nobody I know, and no one in this room, because I've asked you all, signed a yearbook more than a month after you graduated from high school.
Correct.
Michael, the exception, because he was a teacher. And you often ask your teachers. But you left high school, you weren't signing yearbooks. This guy was in his 30s signing someone's yearbook.
Now I know that, and this is an easy story to do when you see it on TV. Mm-hmm. You go and you find people who say, I'm going to vote for him no matter what.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people like that. I'm not going to disparage people in Alabama, because that's too easy to do. I think wherever you live, when you think about this, you go, whoa, wait a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait a second. I don't think he's going to win. I don't.
I don't know. It's Alabama. I think there's a very good chance he'll win.
And those who do support him may be so fired up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
exactly. Again, I've read a lot about it, and I've yet to see anybody say with certainty they think he's going to win and the other guy's going to win. But at a certain
Well, the poll numbers have dropped very sharply recently.
Yeah, but close. We know how accurate polls have been lately.
Okay.
Exactly.
Should he drop out? Well, he should drop out.
He should, but he won't.
I don't think he will.
No, he won't. What else is he going to do, by the way?
Not going
to
drop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else will he do?
He's not going to drop.
So it's disturbing.
It's disturbing.
Very disturbing.
And I actually find I hear what you're saying about some people just support him no matter what. But come on, at what point? At what point you're going to elect a pedophile because he happens to be of one party? Come on.
Yeah. Well.
If I knew,
train left the station.
I will tell you that. Well, I don't know what he looked like at 31 or 32, but if. You had a friend.
Creepy. That's what he looked
if
like.
If you had a friend who was 31 or 32 and you say, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm dating this 15-year-old. No, whoa. What are you doing?
I think all of us go to that. You get to that point where you just know organically that you shouldn't be doing things that you did 10 minutes ago because you're older now and it doesn't make any sense to do it. You shouldn't do them. It's wrong. It's weird.
It's icky. It's icky.
Yeah.
It comes. Very, it falls very. Under the politically icky category.
Right. Did anybody here ever read the book? It's Mizzou or Missoula. I'm terrible with book titles. Mm. But it was about the sexual assaults on the campus of Missoula.
No. And it's actually University of Montana.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that there?
It's actually a really, really smart book about sexual assault, and it addresses all the questions that we always ask. Well, why did they wait 20 years or 30 years or whatever? And we've seen this in all the stories coming out of Hollywood and elsewhere. There are very good and very real legitimate reasons people, whether they're men or women, who've been assaulted, sometimes wait decades.
Yeah.
Right? It just, they cannot bring it forward.
It's
the
traumatic.
Guilt, the shame that they put on themselves,
traumatic.
It's just remarkable. Yes. And to hear the consistency of the stories these women are telling of Roy Moore, or the women and men are telling of those who are assaulted by all the characters we've heard about lately, it's remarkable. And there's a legitimacy they are all giving one another by telling their stories.
And by the way, I think it is possible, I saw his wife saying that he's never raised a hand, he's the kindest person he's got. It's very possible that they knew each other beyond when this happened. I mean, it seems reasonable to me.
Do you think she knew?
I don't know. I would go no. You would go yes? Yeah, I would go no. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, let's all go take showers now.
It's a disturbing story.
And the thing, to your point, there's always a pattern.
Right.
It's a repeatable pattern with people who do this. They do the same thing over and over and over again. Whatever it is that they're doing.
And the assaulters often say to the person who is either younger or in a position of less influence, often say, well, no, don't say anything. No one will believe you.
Yeah.
That's what this woman said,
Roy Moore said to her, when she was, what, 16, 17?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a downer. We'll get out of here. We'll come back with email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The toaster oven must be on the fritz. And cable's out again. Please fix my TV and plug it in. And I think I must have made it clear by now. I change a light bulb, but I don't know how. I'm not a man who's handy around the home. Oh, no, no, no. Well, what's a ratchet man? Ratchet man. Must have me confused with someone else.
Grant Weiss, Williamsburg, Virginia. Fabulous. She says, I could tell you what a ratchet is, but you'd have to know what a spanner is. By then, it's a whole thing. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thank you to Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports for coming on the show. Thank today's sponsors, SeatGeek, ZipRecruiter, Blue Apron. Remember to listen, subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. I will now drink water.
Oh,
very good, because I have to read email. From Bill Isaacson, now in Beijing, China.
Wow.
One of the problems with flying to China last Sunday for a born and raised Packer fan was missing the Packer Bear game. As I sit here on the 71st floor of the China World Summit Wing Hotel, as my consolation for the missed game, I have closets with two bathrobes and two face masks. And then your podcast, it made me so happy to listen to Wilbon's anger. I would fire people. Get out. From plus 22 to minus 2 to the Packers in only 3 decades. Clear your offices. They angered me. I couldn't even get any joy from the Redskins losing. It made every hour of the 13-hour flight worth it. P.S. I will not be providing legal services in Hangzhou on this trip.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But Wednesday night, I will be at the Grand Hyatt in Taipei. I will listen for any littles yelling with cheesery in the hotel bar. From Andy Shaner in Madison, Wisconsin. Shaner. You opened up Shaner. Monday's Old Guys segment talking for 10 minutes about a bunch of guys no one has ever heard of who played a scramble with your kid at your fancy country club. And you're worried the Redskins are too local? From Bill in Kensington, Maryland. So Michael is about to buy a Subaru. Make sure he gets the Thule, is that how it's pronounced, T-H-U-L-E, the Thule trailer, hitch, bike rack, and not the roof carrier. Then he can get the kayak carrier for the roof. Also, does Michael have an opinion on new Fitbit Ionic smartwatch? Is it worth the money? I will hang up and listen. Trashing Michael, which always makes me laugh, although Michael's in a bad way now. I don't want this to happen. Benjamin Brunner in Easton, Maryland. Dear Dr. Hoff and Waff, renovating chatter, huh? How many times this week can we expect to hear "Stop the hammering" on the podcast? Stop it. John in Pittsburgh.
Yay.
I traveled to D.C. this weekend. I finally learned firsthand about the quiet car. That's what happens when you actually end up in it with a 4-year-old and hyperactive 8-year-old.
Ooh.
The first dirty look came when I accidentally forgot to silence my phone and received a text. Maybe Baby Got Back wasn't the right song to have as an alert tone.
Maybe
the kids did surprisingly well and only got a few shushes from fellow passengers. The guy in front of us tried to tell a quick story about a picture on his phone. He was shot down by no less than 8. Shh, it's the quiet car, followed by a, what a bleep is the quiet car? The worst part was trying to get the stroller through the aisles. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage picked the little one up and I carried the stroller. I knocked the knees of 3 people zoned out on their cell phones with earbuds in. They're apparently littles as they gave me the TK salute. Anyway, I learned to avoid the quiet car with kids. Jack Selby in Falls Church, Virginia. On Thursday night, your Binghamton Bearcats. How did we do last night, by the way?
Oh,
because we beat Morgan State the other night.
I will check that.
Your Binghamton Bearcats come to Fairfax to play my alma mater, the George Mason Patriots. Would you be interested in attending? Of course I would. It's impossible to get from Midtown, D.C.
Yeah. It's a hump.
You can't get there in time for their 7 o'clock tip. You can't do it.
Big loss.
I know you very rarely come over to the Virginia side of the border, but it's relatively close to the Army-Navy Country Club you found with such ease a few weeks ago. I don't have tickets yet or parking, so maybe you could spring for that. Plus, they just opened a Chipotle on campus. We can go over and grab some grub before the game. I can impress you with my sports trivia knowledge. It'll be just like riding the Metro. Shoot me a text to let me know what time works best for you. We played Cornell. We got beat.
94-84.
You know who starts for the Cornell Big Red? And I have ties to them for paying tuition there. You know who starts for them?
Who's that?
Jim Boeheim's son, Jimmy.
Is that right?
Remember Randy Whitman's son was very good
at
Cornell.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you Jimmy, see the jersey five, the mom points. Wore the other night?
Yeah.
It was great. I can't lose.
Right. It's really good. That's Julie Boeheim.
5 points for young Boeheim.
Okay. Nine. Do you have a box score? How did our kid Shaw, Show, how did he was out all year with an injury.
Let's see. 12 points.
Okay.
4 boards, 3 assists.
Okay.
But Bruce dropped in 28 for you guys. Some guy named
Bruce Springsteen?
It was Bruce Springsteen.
Besides playing the pivot. Okay, Eric Zdenek. Can we talk about the ambient noise in the background of the entire Monday show? Sounded like someone sanding by hand the entire time. Yes, they were sanding the bar.
Exactly.
Yes.
What was going on?
Has the sander replaced the leaf blower as the official ambient noise provided to Tony Corner's show?
Not today.
Obviously not.
No. Not today.
Obviously not. Does the sander have his own Twitter page? And then it says, at least it wasn't hammering. Stop hammering. Did anyone stop the damned hammering? All right, if you're out in bye time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You know what ought to happen to them? They ought to be stabbed by cocktail forks.
Oh, my.
Oh, my, Andy. Oh, my.
Hold it on. surrender once again, again, again. Can't be stopped like we had thought. No, we're gonna push on through. Love it to fight it. Looks like we're trying it once again, again, again. Not gonna stop it. No, quite the opposite. We're gonna push on through.
Out into the deep blue. Well, he was looking to kill something just like him. This one was big and white, but still had fins. He said, "You owe me a leg, and I'ma see I get it back from you." Sailed through the water, high low, shooting harpoons at the beast below. Cap pressed on, despite the company's groans. And wouldn't you know, up came the whale, and the boat and crew sucked out of jail. Now that sailor, he belongs. Davy Jones. Another story about a hummingbird who sung just to sing and not to be heard. So happened it was captured and thrown in a cage one day by a woman who loved the sound of its tune. She'd listen every day from dawn till noon. But the bird wanted out and it just had to find a way. Beat on the cage, giving everything back to his perch with a broken wing. Right then that he was never gonna break out the door. So it goes, the bird sung a song so loud that the lady's ears went wrong. And now that lady, well, she can't hear no more. And pick what you like and go set sail, whether it be a hummingbird or a big white whale, and chase it all around like you meant to match. Well, you'll see what happens when you try to cage a bird that's meant to fly, or when you go fishing for something that you just can't catch. When you go fishing for something that